Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello, so we descend into the first international break of the season and take a much-needed breather from FPL this week after a truly befuddling opening four game weeks. It's gone from Fantasy Penalty League to Fantasy WTAF League, hasn't it? Now, we slated last week's pod as making sense of the madness, and in some ways we could run the exact same pod again. But this time, you know, we've got 4 weeks' worth of data, so we're going to properly dip our toe into the stats water on this one and see what we can see, I suppose. We've got the usual full house of co-hosts today. Nick, you're right. Transfer window's about to slam shut. Are you avidly keeping up as you record the pod?
I kind of got over the old sort of transfer window waiting for last minute news up until midnight. And certainly this year with Spurs, it's a lot better, isn't it? Previous years, I'm thinking, are we going to actually sign anyone at all? But we've done all our business already. Yeah. It's been very good for us. So I'm not too gripped on my TV. But as you said, it's definitely felt like a really topsy-turvy week after Sunday's games were just absolutely crazy. But we've got a couple of weeks now, haven't we, before the next Premier League football, so maybe things will calm down. Either that or we'll see a repeat of 15-16 where all the top teams drop the ball and Leicester won the Premier League, so maybe that will happen again. So if you've forgotten who we are Who Got the Assist, and you can find us generally on Twitter or Instagram if you want to give us a follow there, wgta.fpl. Welcome to the new listeners as well. Don't forget to hit subscribe if you like what you hear. And finally, if you want to join our league as well, the league code is CPSULF. Anthony, how are you?
Evening, lads. Another poor FPL game week from me, but, you know, that's becoming par for the course for all of us so far this season, so I'll get by with that. Unlike pretty much everyone else in the FPL world, I'm very much looking forward to this international break because it is the most consequential Ireland game of the year, a playoff against Slovakia. Which would put us one step closer to qualifying for the Euros that may or may not happen next summer. So, anyway, we'll move on from my Ireland talk because talk of 1-1 draws or 2-1 wins or 1-0 wins is pretty boring. Agenda for today's pod. What can we tell from the first 4 weeks that we can look forward with? Because, of course, it's been so unpredictable. There's been obviously penalties, but there's so much more that we could probably read into 4 weeks of data at this point. So we're going to try and work that out for you. We'll move on to the correspondence section, everyone's favourite thing, and the Q&A at the end. But first off, we're going to do our market forces and our game week reviews.
Yeah, let's take the game reviews first, get them out of the way, because it was a pretty quiet game week, wasn't it? I mean, the three of us were just comparing notes before came on air. And it appears I've won out of the 51. That is the state of things at the moment. I might as well keep going. So 51 this week. Key bright spots were Salah, James and McCarthy. McCarthy got me a 9-pointer. Rodriguez with that 18 points really, really saved my ass, really. And Salah with the 13, but lots of disappointment. Kevin De Bruyne, the second arm blank in a row. That's obviously really disappointing. My vice-captain, Jimenez, I specifically really bought Jimenez for this fixture. Another blank. And Richarlison taken off after 25 minutes with ankle knack. And Anthony Martial got an assist. And then proceeded to get himself sent off after Lamella fell to the floor like what Graham Souness with the scrap number and go there. But yeah, anyway, 51 points, not great. A laughable green arrow. I rose 20,000 places, guys, from 1.85 million to 1.83 million. So cause for celebration all round. But yeah, I'm glad that I banked the transfer more than anything. So now I've got two frees to play with. I'm going to be removing Martial, probably looking to do a few bits and pieces. But yeah, I'm glad the international break too, because it's been quite punishing, hasn't it? Who's second? I think it's Anthony, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I didn't think I'd be second, but here we are. I only got 40 points, and probably more distressingly, I had as many players who got minus points as who actually returned anything at all. Those returns came from Mo Salah, who I didn't captain, so unfortunately only 40 points, really, and Callum Wilson, who got 16 points. And to be honest with you, I'm not quite sure where we'd be if I didn't have Callum Wilson this week. It could have been a complete disaster of unbelievable proportions, so we'll take it. Danny Ings' captaincy didn't work out. Richarlison, like you, Tom. Foden and De Bruyne continuing the misery. Ollie Burke with 1 point. James Justin with 1 point. Then Wan-Bissaka and Trent Alexander-Arnold, both obviously on the ends of pretty big pumping, so minus one each. And Aaron Ramsdale, more disappointment from him. He is gone, along with so many of the rest of those players I've just named, because I'm now wildcard active, which was something I'd been mooting on the pods for the last few weeks, but had to be done. I led so much value. I only had a team value of 100.5 going into Sunday, and that was after I'd pulled the wildcard on Saturday night and actually gained 0.3 in value, which would just tell you basically how many of the players that I picked in my game week one squad had dropped in value and who just hadn't performed, I guess. So I've already had two game week ranks above 4.5 million, 2.1 million overall. It could be a lot worse, I think, but at the same time, I really do need to kind of take executive action and make some moves. So the wildcard will hopefully help me do that.
I got 43 points overall, but because of the minus four, that makes it 39 net. So yeah, pretty damn dreadful. It's just certainly been a bit of a flip-flop in terms of my game week rank. Vardy blanking, he's acting like the inverse Son Heung-min for my team right now. My hit actually kind of netted out anyway, because I got in Calvert-Lewin, who got me 6 points compared to Werner Mitrovic, who blanked anyway, so I wasn't punished by the hit. But still, I brought in Danny Ings, gave him the armband, but of course, sort of Johnston decided to show up, so that didn't work out. So apart from Calvert-Lewin, my only other returns was a nine-pointer from McCarthy in goal. And Mo Salah, who also picked up 13 points, also had Bissouma on the bench, but unfortunately he was blocked because Podence decided to actually play this week. So Maximin, obviously scoring as well, punished me even further because he went on the hit for Podence, like many a manager, and then Podence decides to block my Bissouma points and play this week. It was a bit of a shambles, very frustrating, painful. But it is what it is. And as we say, you move on.
Yeah, we do indeed. And we will move on to the market forces. Let's see what's been going on, because obviously there's a lot of grievance this week, a lot of anger. You know, the likes of Timo Werner, lots of why the F did I hold him being spouted on Twitter. What's been going on, Nick? How is the market reacting? Especially helpful for Stag as well, because he's on that wild card.
Yeah, the market's been really, really busy, actually. There's already been 660,000 transfers in for Min Son. It's just that roller coaster just seems to be going on and on, because he's most transferred out, and most transferred in, most transferred out. Now he's the most transferred in yet again. Surely you can't make it 5 weeks in a row, we'll have to see. But obviously an excellent performance for him in the last game week. So many managers rightfully bringing him in this week. But yeah, his transfers all over the shop, really dominating the market forces and the conversations so far this season. But otherwise, it's also James Rodriguez, Tom's man, also being heavily brought in from another excellent performance from him. He's had 437,000 transfers out. And as you mentioned, Tom, the player being mostly sold is Timo Werner, 266,000 transfers out. He's looking like a very expensive ball and chain in many people's FPL team, especially considering how many budget forwards are firing so far.
Yeah, so that's the third consecutive time that we've seen Werner here. So he's now fallen down to 9.3. And he's not the only one that we've seen falling into these consecutive weeks featuring in this particular slot. We've got, in terms of the defenders, TAA and Matt Doherty is actually in there for the fourth time in a row as amongst the most transferred out defenders. Whereas the most transferred in defender it's basically a reaction to last week. It's Ben Chilwell. He's already up to 5.6 after a debut 18 points for Chelsea, transferred in by 360,000 teams. Followed by Castagna, he's been pretty much in this slot every week as well, as one of the most transferred in defenders, 130k or so. Obviously three attacking returns in the first few games, but nothing in game week four, just the point there.
Yeah, and otherwise it's Calvert-Lewin and Kane, obviously two very popular forwards based on their performances so far, being heavily bought, rounding up the sort of the transfers in, 350,000 transfers in for DCL and 270,000 transfers in for Harry Kane. But it's also De Bruyne and Aubameyang that are being sold as well. So De Bruyne is the second most transferred out player with 210,000 transfers out. A lot of people perhaps going to get punished by that one, I suspect. And Aubameyang 190,000 transfers. He was looking pretty good at the start of the season with his reclassification, but he's really struggled to impact the game so far for Arsenal, and sort of being shunted out on the wing. A bit like Timo Werner's not doing him too much good in terms of attacking returns so far.
DCL is now up to 7.6 million, so obviously nobody's been rising like him. 0.6 in value gain is pretty massive, and I think he's definitely staking the claim to being the new postman, taking that off that title off Raul Jimenez. Another 6 points this week, scoring in every single game so far. Pretty impressive.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Nick. Very interesting to see how it's going. Obviously, we've got a couple of weeks now, so I don't know. Maybe we'll see a few more rises and falls, but I suspect it might be a little bit of a quiet couple of weeks in the international break. It always does tend to be. Cool. All right. So let's move on to the main topic this week. Can we really tell anything from the first 4 weeks? Well, I mean, I put the question out initially, and it does seem like there's a little bit of anger, fatigue, negativity about how the first 4 weeks have gone. People like Ant Dickinson asked us, you know, how to delete their team. FPL Chocolate asks, do we even get FPL points? How do we even get FPL points? And Queevin FPL asks, what the hell is going on, simply? But there's a good question this week from Ryan Lee, who asks, penalties aside, what are some trends you guys have observed so far? And that epitomizes what we're looking at today. What can we tell after 4 weeks? I guess we're looking forward as well. We've got 4 weeks of data now, and we're going to be breaking that down into mini trends, I guess. These are the best team, the best players. I think we're each going to nominate three. The star, this could be the best player. The surprise and the flop all so far, which kind of will help us to just assess really what we've seen so far. And as Anthony mentioned, how that may translate into future things. I mean, it has been crazy, hasn't it? 144 goals in 38 games. That's 3.78 goals per game, the highest ratio of goals per game since the 1929-1930 season. There's an average of around 40 more goals than usual compared to the last 10 years, which is just mental. Penalties as well, I'll just give you an update on that. Less in the zeitgeist this week, but there's 25 that have been given, 23 have been scored. That's an 88% miss ratio compared to a usual 17%. Last season, we hit 25 penalties in game week 15, which is early December. So it's quite something to hit it at the conclusion of game week 4. So yeah, absolutely crazy. But let's try our best to use some data to try to figure out if there's anything we can take from what we've seen thus far, starting with the best team, or is it the best teams? It may be a couple are in the running here. What do you guys have for this? Anthony, who have you gone for?
It's very hard to look beyond either Everton or Villa for this particular slot. And I think I'm going to go for Everton in this. And from an FPL perspective, I think it's that once you'd kind of got game week one and game week two out of the way, I think you could definitely say that what we thought would be dependable returns from their players have definitely come. So that would be from Dominic Calvert-Lewin and James Rodriguez. Unfortunately, then you and I, Tom, have suffered at the hands of Richarlison, who, in spite of, you know, he flattered to deceive, really. He had so many shots, but wasn't able to pull it together. And Nick, you suffered with Lucas Digne. So there has been that other side to this Everton side. But of course, when they've won four games in a row, they've scored nicely on the way to that 12 goals so far. It's just been pretty brilliant, really. And you don't need to really unearth too many details to be able to tell you that. And of course, with the DCL returning every week, James Rodriguez has just added so many extra dimensions to their game, which have been highlighted on any show you watch at any time. It's just that creativity that they, you know, sometimes didn't have, that belief that they sometimes didn't have, is definitely there. And even, I think we're seeing their defense, whilst it hasn't necessarily returned handsomely so far, we're definitely seeing, you know, pretty good indications from there. If they didn't have Jordan Pickford in goals, I see there are rumors that they might be making a deadline day move for a goalkeeper tonight. If that were to happen, especially, I think this Everton defense would look even more attractive. But already we've seen goals from Yerry Mina and Michael Keane, and that's definitely not a mistake. Keane has definitely spoken about there being an emphasis put on evading his marker and getting on headers at corners and the like to return more goals. And so just overall, this Everton team is turning into threats across the board where we could definitely look at them for our FPL teams.
Yeah, definitely. The top, aren't they, at the moment? Most goals, most assists. And they've actually scored the most FPL points this season so far amongst teams, 2-2-2. Interestingly, the other team that you nominated, Anthony, Villa, they're second in terms of FPL points scored, 217. Third, West Ham. 204. Wow. Funnily enough, I had a different team in mind. I thought you were going to say a different team other than Villa. That's Spurs. Far be it from me to be praising Spurs and Arsenal fan, yada, 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 tribal stuff, blah. But they've had the most big chances. They've had the most shots on target. They've had the most big chances created, the best XGI, and they've had the joint most goals scored and assists made. I think with Spurs, it's really important to say here that sometimes we don't foresee things, obviously. And I think it's really clear with Spurs that the negativity around Mourinho at the start of the season, the Ali mishap, the Son hokey-cokey that many managers have been on the wrong side of. I mean, it may be games been favourable to them, but looking around my mini-leagues, the people who are killing it at the moment are really unfamiliar faces, all of whom are Spurs fans who have been on double Kane and Son since the beginning and have captained one of them most weeks. It's been absolute madness, but it's more of a case of, okay, maybe with Everton, it's the kind of the outcomes in players later. I'll come into that a little bit more. But with Spurs, I think it is just how different they've looked. Even James from Planet FPL was saying that they think something's really changed there with them, and certainly over the next four fixtures. I mean, it is looking pretty good after we get back, isn't it?
Challenge you on this topic. Yeah, like, sure. The fact of the matter is, you've picked a team that's won twice, drawn once, and lost once to Everton.
Yeah.
In this, and it's like, from an FPL perspective, sure, they've had two good games, but the fact of the matter is that, like, it was an imploding 10-man Man United who were just handing them goals, and a Southampton team playing Harry Carey with a high line and just seemingly not learning whatsoever. And the way they struggled against Everton, and particularly against Newcastle, would actually make me nervous for, let's say, the double up. Sure, that's very hard to argue with anybody who's going to go ahead with one Spurs player at least, well, Son or Kane, effectively. But to talk about them as, you know, the best team so far, I don't know about that. Like, I can totally see how you could identify one of their players as a star player or whatever. But to say best team?
I mean, we're talking from an FPL perspective here, not from a football perspective, aren't we? And in terms of, I guess, the FPL potential from that team, in terms of the data that they're showing, in terms of attacking. I mean, I'll take your point about it being two fixtures really driving it. And obvious caveat is that we've got a very small sample size, and people could say, well, you've got to remove this game, remove that game.
But even as this crazy season goes, there were two absolutely insane games that you can kind of point to where Spurs did well, you know?
It's still apples with apples, right? Every game is played in the same conditions, and you can't discount freak results from the data. I mean, later on in the season, we may look at some stuff where we say, all right, non-top six only, here's how they've done. But at the moment, we've got to make the most of what we've got. And the fact is, those games happen, those goals happen. I think we get into different territory when you start saying, well, that's not really a goal, well, that doesn't really count. And the data is still good enough, even though I probably would accept that Everton probably a little bit better. Anyway, Nick, you've been very patient. What's your view on all this?
So, I mean, I probably agree with Anthony there in terms of...
Good man.
I think it's Everton. I think my problem with Spurs is, as was said, it's been two very excellent, two fantastic performances, but there's been two very frustrating ones to accompany them, especially as a fan. Obviously, the first game against Everton was dreadful, and then the final game against Newcastle, of course, they were 1-0 up, and then, you know, they were unfortunate to concede that penalty in the last minute, but, you know, they struggled to penetrate that defence, and I think that's probably part of the concern there with Spurs. They're very good on the counter-attack. They're looking excellent on the counter-attack, but when teams put 10 men behind the ball, they seem to be struggling a little bit, and that's shown from their home form as opposed to their away form. Whilst with Everton, we've seen that they certainly can perform away and at home. So they beat West Brom 5-2 in game week 2, and they beat Brighton 4-2 in game 4. So they are, as far as I'm concerned, the most impressive team so far. And also, I say from an FPL perspective, what's great about Everton compared to Spurs is the prices. So much harder for us to afford two Spurs players compared to affording two Everton players, or even a triple up in Everton. Finally, I'd also like to quickly reiterate Aston Villa. If they'd played four games, perhaps we'd all be talking about them right now. But the fact is, they've only played three games, but they won three games, and they've got two clean sheets, and they scored seven past Liverpool. So what the hell is that all about?
So you've had Grealish, who would have been the player you'd identified as a talisman, 3 goals, 3 assists. Of course, a lot of that came against Liverpool, but they hit another game where he did score as well. And then you've had Tyrone Mings and Konsa, both returning goals, both getting those clean sheets, obviously, and Emi Martinez as well in nets, the best 4.5 keeper, now 4.6 in the game as it stands now.
I mean, couldn't you make the same argument, though, about Aston Villa and the 7-2 against Liverpool that you made against me mentioning Spurs?
I guess, I'm saying with Grealish as the talisman you would have identified returned in two games. One of them, he returned, you know, against Liverpool. Obviously, the number of returns he got was pretty striking. But at the same time, he would still have been the player that you would have identified in that Villa team. Like, I'm not necessarily saying we should be picking Conor Hourihan or Ollie Watkins because we don't have much to work off here, but they've had good games, both of them. Mings and Konsa didn't get much from the Liverpool game, but they've both scored this season. Mings has also got an assist. They both got their clean sheets. Konsa's probably better on the bonus points when they get a clean sheet. And then Emi Martinez has got his clean sheets as well. So that's definitely not taking the Liverpool game into account at all for those two.
Cool. I mean, it's just such a small sample size, isn't it, overall, that it's very hard to be making any kind of concrete judgments from three, four games. And I do want to quickly, before we move on to this section, shout out West Ham, though. They've had the third most shots in the box and created the third most big chances. The reason I want to shout them out, though, is because most people, including us, looked at their season start and thought, ew, nah. Obviously, some people had Suchet, but they had Newcastle, Arsenal, Wolves and Leicester of their first four, and they've still got a group of terrible fixtures to come. But the last two results in particular, just spectacular, and they've scored the most FPL points of any team over the last two game weeks. David Moyes, the best work from home manager ever. I can't ever remember a case where a manager's absence has made the team so demonstrably better. Maybe he should just stay at home and remove himself from West Ham touchline duties forever. Huh? But it sounds like we're kind of zeroing on Everton at least as being the team so far. I mean, the next few, they're okay. Liverpool, yeah, okay. That's it could be a tough game, but given how Liverpool just did, you might actually expect that to be quite an interesting one. Southampton, Newcastle and Man United. Do you guys see any let up in their momentum? I mean, obviously we've got the COVID context, etc., but anything beyond that?
You looked at those fixtures, you say, okay, Liverpool and Manchester United look like hard games, but as we saw, they just conceded 13 goals between them in the last game week. So I can see plenty more goals coming for the likes of Calvert-Lewin and for the likes of James Rodriguez, unfortunately, because I don't own him. And depends if Richarlison's injured or not, but he's certainly going to get involved in terms of the goals and assists as well. They're looking like a really, really strong unit. I mean, defensively, I'm not sure how many clean sheets they're going to be getting. I think certainly if you've got a double up on the Everton attack, by all means keep it. And if you don't have a double up or you don't have an Everton player, don't be frightened by that Liverpool fixture and still go for them, because they've just been brilliant so far.
It seems like this Everton team are quite knitted together. I don't think that they'll comprehensively beat Liverpool. I think they could beat Liverpool, but I think more than likely, given what just happened to Liverpool, I expect them to come out of the traps and take the win over Everton or get a draw there. And then Everton can move on from there. You wouldn't be fearful of them against most other teams in the league, though. I think they're well able to exploit things. Calvert-Lewin does seem like a formish type striker, or a streaky striker, but he's currently very much on a streak, so yeah. we'll believe in it for now and see what happens later. I think there's been an awful lot of talk about how Ancelotti's been working on him to do first time finishes, and that's definitely been a hallmark of his early season form, and it's hard to know, of course, if he'll continue to be able to get in those positions and finish as he does, but I think I'd be optimistic that it's coaching that is making them better and not just fortune.
Yeah, that's a good point. 9 shots on target, Calvert-Lewin, 6 goals. It's very, very hard to argue with that. All right, we're lapsing into players, so might as well move on to it anyway. Best players so far, I think we should nominate maybe 3 just to keep it manageable, and I'm guessing we're probably going to agree on a few of them. I think maybe my effusiveness about Spurs, uncharacteristic effusiveness about Spurs, is going to be stretched even further here in terms of uncharacteristic praise, because the first guy I pulled out is Harry Kane. Kane is back, I think. I'm buying him, I think, as well, and captaining him next week. He's playing as number 9 again, not the DM. He's got the most shots so far, joint with fellow volume merchant Salah. He's had the most shots on target. He's second for shots in the box. He's expected to be involved in over 6 in 10 of Spurs' goals. And he's got that delightful kind of combination with Son. So far, 3 goals, 6 assists. And I've looked back over the last kind of few years for him, 2016-17 when he scored 29 goals, 15-16 when he scored 18. This is the most shots he's ever started the season with, and kind of the best kind of starting stats for Kane ever. And the volume, coupled with the fact that Kane is a very, very good finisher, is absolutely brilliant. The other thing I want to just mention quickly is the assist potential for him as well. He's created the most big chances of any player so far, 3 more than the person in second, who's Salah for some reason, and he has the highest XA of any player. Yeah, I think Kane's back and he's well worth the 10.6. I'm probably going to be buying him and putting him in. So yeah, he's probably the one at the moment that I think is one of the best players so far. But I mean, obviously I'm aware that I've overlooked Son a little bit, and I guess that's the one you've been liking, Nick.
Yeah, it's worth actually highlighting in terms of Harry Kane. He's actually one assist away from his Premier League season record. He's already had six assists so far. His record in a season was seven. Of course, the famous season where he got 29 goals, he only had two assists that year. So he's a very sort of selfish player. But this season, he seems to be linking excellently with Son Heung-min, set him up. I mean, almost, I think four of those assists have been, four or five have been for Son. So that's a real new element to his game that he's brought this season. And yeah, that, you know, I think he's an excellent shout for best player. Son is certainly one I have been looking at, but I wanted to actually firstly mention Mo Salah, because I feel like with Salah, to be honest, you know, he normally gets so much praise from everyone, but like it feels like no one's really talking about him at all because there's so much else that is going on, and you know, he's kind of flying a little bit under the radar. Of course, he is in most of our teams, but I just noticed in terms of how he's dominating this season, he's got five goals and assists, and his underlying stats as well have been excellent. So as you said, he's joint top with Kane for 19 goal attempts. 15 of those have been inside the box. He's had an attempt every 18.9 minutes. He's also top for penalty box touches with 42. And, you know, he has just been excellent, hasn't he? Of course, he's only scored in two of the games, not four of the games. But, you know, hat-trick against Leeds, a couple against Aston Villa, where he was the only bright spark in that Liverpool team. But, you know, we don't talk about him or praise him as much as we used to because he's the most expensive player in the game. But he's that expensive for a reason. Yeah. I think he is critical still for our FPL teams, and he's definitely going to have a really strong season. If he keeps up this current rate, he'll beat his 300 points actually from a couple of seasons back. But of course, he has to keep it up.
Yeah, and definitely two very promising finishes against Villa to kind of supplement that Leeds hat-trick. I think if you were to talk about, you know, the dependable player, I think Salah is probably the one that I'd pick out. Whereas, of course, the star player that I would, you know, just for this season so far, I would agree with you guys, be Kane. And I think why I think that is because of what I think is that he will be able to keep this up. And Tom, you've talked about him, you know, having that assist potential, and you've both spoken about that. But also, of course, his conversion. He's only converted 15% of his shots, getting to three goals. Obviously, he's on penalties and that has helped that, but he's still had the most shots of any player in the league, obviously drawing with Salah, as you guys said. So it just feels like his goal scoring could actually be better than it has been so far. Whereas Son, he's converted 60% of the shots he's taken. That's incredibly high. And like, whilst it's impressive, ooh, and you have to give him all the credit, yeah, for that, and he's obviously got one more point than Kane, I just think long run, Kane is going to be well worth the extra 1.6 million on him right now as we record. Other players you'd have to talk about in terms of best players, we have to mention the likes of Calvert-Lewin and James Rodriguez, but obviously at a very different price point there. And then maybe at the very cheap price point, and I'll just drag the conversation down that direction, we didn't think it, and you know, there was an awful lot of 5.5 midfielders we were talking about pre-season, Sam Maximan, some of the Leeds guys maybe who did well early on. You could talk about Click, Costa, there's still hope for Podence as well. But it's Jorginho. It's got to be Jorginho, just in terms of points. Nobody encapsulates the whole entire fantasy penalty league program more than Jorginho, just consistently returning away there. Three goals, one assist. And we talked about before how his, you know, his assist potential was always quite good, but just didn't necessarily match up in terms of the assists he actually returned. So you'd think maybe with actual good strikers ahead of him, that may turn for him. But of course, Werner hasn't been returning so far.
No, a Milivojevic Mark II, potentially, if these penalties keep being awarded. I see where you could go there. I think he probably wouldn't. I don't know. It's one of those where you're so reliant on one particular thing, which is penalties. I just not quite put him in the best players by category. I think he's an anomalous player. I wouldn't say he's necessarily been one of the best players so far.
You go doing a value per million metric analysis,
Oh, but speaking of analysis that we like doing, talisman theory, right? I did have a look through the players and one guy really stood out, and it's a funny one actually. You own him, Anthony. Callum Wilson. He's actually got an 83% goal involvement ratio for Newcastle right now and 85% expected goal involvement ratio for Newcastle right now. I mean, he's the epitome of talisman theory at the moment. He's not a volume striker. He certainly won't be at Newcastle either. And he's one of those who kind of shoots when he thinks he can score. But off talismaning for Bournemouth, it's really interesting to see how he's taken that mantle of the number 9, or number 13 actually, at Newcastle. And he's doing really well for them, isn't he? Like, he's 6.4. In fact, he could potentially be a very good bargain. But Newcastle have got an okay run all the way up to Christmas, you could just happily buy him and leave him in there, I think.
Mm-hmm. But this is the thing with Callum Wilson, is that you wouldn't rule him out scoring a goal against anybody, obviously helped by pens, but you wouldn't rule it out happening. And as you say, he is the most likely man in that Newcastle team. You might even be unfair to Newcastle and say he's the only man in that Newcastle team. And so with that in mind, it's just such a handy value pick to have in there at 6.4. I've absorbed a loss in team value to have him in my team so far, but I'm very content to have him there. He's returned obviously in 3 of the 4 weeks, and like that's all you want from a player like him.
I think he's winning at the moment the sweepstake to be the next Ings. Nick, who else did you pick up?
In terms of sort of the cheaper picks, I actually quite like Neil Mopay. I think that he's had an excellent start to the season as well. A little bit like Callum Wilson, he's certainly emerging as the Brighton talisman. Though, of course, he's got a few other creative players that are providing some help as well, like Leandro Trossard, who's also had an excellent start to the season. But what I quite like about Mopay is the fact that Brighton have had actually some really tough fixtures considering how well he's got. So Mopay's got 4 goals and an assist. He's returned in 3 out of the 4 games. But they played Chelsea, Newcastle, Man United and Everton. That's a really tough run for Brighton. And they've got some really nice fixtures actually in the next 5. So after this, they've got Crystal Palace, West Brom, Spurs, Burnley, Aston Villa in their next 5. So I think, you know, Brighton assets might start to get on the radar a little bit. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about Lamptey. Definitely looks good on the eye in terms of his performances. So getting forward, getting, you know, very attacking. So both Mopay and Lamptey are 2 players that I'm looking at and thinking actually they look like really great FPL assets, could have an excellent season. And of course Trossard as well, as I mentioned briefly, the other Brighton player perhaps that a lot of people are looking at and bring him in. He's been a bit unlucky not to get more than 1 goal so far, because I think he hit the crossbar or post or something 6 times in 1 game, didn't he, or something ridiculous.
Five against United, and I guess that was a surprise.
No, it certainly makes sense. I do like Mopay. I've never got quite enough space for him. I think just to address a couple of fairly obvious ones as well, because there'll be people screaming, why haven't you mentioned these guys? I mean, we have obviously spoken about Everton already, but I think 2 for me, 1 being the star, is obviously Calvert-Lewin. I haven't owned him, so it's a bit painful. It's another Ing situation, perhaps. But if form exists, he's in it right now. As I mentioned, 9 shots on target, 6 goals, and 0.6 million rise already. Wow, I think he's like the star. But the one I really like is James Rodriguez. This is a kind of a football-y mix with FPL point here. I love Kevin De Bruyne. He's a great player to watch. But this guy, he is actually really, really good as well. And that's not a surprise. That's not analysis. That's not insight. But he is so effing good to watch. One thing I noticed is that he's also a great fantasy asset. And puts paid to any of the assists in the assist to rubbish I was seeing in group chats. He recorded a fab XGI in Spain and Germany. And the challenge with him more was how he did acclimatise to a team that perhaps wasn't expected to win. As Ancelotti said, the ball is the same, the pitch is the same, the rule is the same. If the player has class enough, we shouldn't worry about that. And wow, yeah, definitely he has that class. But I think one cool thing that I saw on the James, which sums him up really, is his positional awareness, right? It's just so good. He's so intelligent on the ball and even more intelligent off it. He's always in the right place and finding the space. This is writ large in his sprints, less than 5 per game. Against West Brom, he did 0 sprints and got man of the match in that game. Got 12 points as well in FPL. 18 in the last game. No, it's just so good. Like, I'm so glad I got him in game week 2.
I'm very jealous of your Hammers pick. I'm also very jealous of managers with Son, because Son was the player that I actually called out as the star man, the star so far. Son's only sort of played or performed in 2 of the games. So sort of reading my words a little bit there, but I think he has been the star player of this campaign, just in terms of his underlying stats. He's just been excellent, hasn't he? You see second also for chances created amongst the midfielders, so it's not just the goals for him, a bit like Kane. They're working so well together. He's created 13 chances, which is second only to De Bruyne. He's created 14, and that's a chance every 23 minutes. And just, yeah, Spurs are just looking dominant, aren't they? Of course, they just got a 7-2 on Thursday against Maccabi as well, so... Really, really good times for Tottenham. And I think Son, you know, I said before the season started that I reckoned he was going to get 200-plus points this season for the first time. He's definitely well on the way there.
Hopefully that gives you a nice little look at a few players who may be, well, ones you consider if you were on the wildcard, ones maybe you'd be buying in of like Wilson or something like that. Kane versus Son, a few little nuggets there. But no, it sounds like we're all kind of broadly aligned on those. Let's do a couple more sort of qualitative ones, shall we? Surprise of the year so far. Obviously, this is quite an open one. There's only been 4 game weeks, but I'm interested to see what you guys thought of when you saw that I wanted you to think of something for this. Anthony, what did you go with? What's been the surprise so far for you in the first 4 weeks?
Aside from, I guess, the whole entire fantasy penalty league debacle, all of the ridiculous results, I would have thought that there were more mistakes happening, but certainly not in terms of what Opta would regard as mistakes. I had a look into the numbers and there's pretty much been about as many errors per game and errors that led to goals per game as you would normally expect to see, like pretty small differences, so not enough to start talking about. So those were all surprises. But I just identified players more than anything in this. And I think James Rodriguez was one in that I didn't expect him to be able to return like he has. I had him in one of my late drafts, and then I remember just thinking, there's just so much uncertainty about this Everton team. Like, I didn't know what to do. And I certainly didn't think that he could be a consistent danger and show that his price... I felt his price was too low, but I just didn't feel that it was, you know, early on in the season was the time to have him. And then another player would be Castagne, who has been a bit of a revelation there, playing pretty much almost as a wide midfielder as opposed to a fullback,
basically.
And he's been very good at that. And like, whilst you could say an awful lot about Leicester's performances, you could almost like point to them, like you could point to Spurs and say that, you know, it's been up and down for them. But, you know, to get 3 assists, 1 clean sheet, like it's not what we expected from those fixtures from any of their defenders. We probably thought there'd be more clean sheets, and probably we wouldn't have expected him to get as many attacking returns. But I'd be kind of appreciative, at least, of those returns, and I'd be looking to him if this Leicester defence looks like it can tighten up a little bit.
So yeah, I was quite broad with this, but I can narrow it down a little bit as well. So when I was thinking about the surprise so far, I guess it was just kind of Aston Villa in general, just ridiculous surprise. I'd written them off a little bit this season, considering they just about scraped by last season, avoiding relegation. You know, coming 17, I think it was 1 point in the end, wasn't it? And so I was thinking, you know, they're going to struggle again this season. But of course, tying Jack Grealish down to a new contract, signing Ollie Watkins has really, really enhanced them. And of course, now with Ross Barkley as well, who was sort of creating tons of chances in that last game, I think they're looking like a really strong unit. And, you know, they could surprise us all season long. I think Jack Grealish, perhaps the player to call out, 7 million. I think he's now got sort of 3 goals and 3 assists in 3 games. He's got the highest points per game out of all midfielders, highest points per game out of any player that in the game that's played more than one game so far. So, and I think with him and Watkins, they're looking like they can build a really, really strong relationship, which reminds me, it has parallels to the Mahrez and Vardy relationship of 15-16.
Yeah, no, very interesting. I like that. Another one similar to that when I was thinking about this is West Ham too, as I've mentioned. It's just amazing how quickly opinions have changed over the first 4 weeks. I think maybe because we've got availability heuristic remembering the most obvious thing. But, you know, after game week one, we were slating West Ham as relegation fodder. You know, they just lost 3-0 to Newcastle at home. We were really worried for them. And now off the back of soundly defeating Wolves and Leicester, they're now world beaters, aren't they? Interesting. I haven't got too much to add here because I've got penalties, blah, blah, blah. But Aubameyang and Arsenal being quite toothless, I think, is something I'd like to just throw in here. But I think we were all hoping for Aubameyang, and it just didn't happen, did it? You know, the first 2 game weeks, we were all happily kind of sold in game week 3, and obviously it just turned out that Kevin De Bruyne wasn't really the man to be buying. But equally, Aubameyang's not done anything either. I think in the last game, he had no shots on target. I mean, Arsenal, we've just had 30 shots in the last 4 games this season. Only United and West Brom have had fewer. And Man United have only played 3 games. We've got 1 fewer shot than Palace. And we're in the bottom 5 for shots on target as well. Like, really not what I expected from Arsenal. I was expecting, you know, the injection of Willian there. And, you know, with all the exciting players we've got, for us to be a lot better going forward. But it's just, I don't know. I don't know what's been going on, really. It's just not really clicked so far, perhaps.
In a normal week, we would definitely have been saying that a fairly tight win over a pretty disappointing so far Sheffield United would have been, you know, something that we would have definitely been talking about. But just because of the nature of this game week, it means that it's about the seventh biggest headline of the week coming out of it. Maybe another surprise I'll throw in, and it's maybe ties into something we'll talk about in a minute, which is our flop so far. And it's just defences in general. They haven't been that good. Only 4 teams have got 2 clean sheets. Yeah, only 4 teams have had 2 clean sheets. Villa being one of them, who've only played 3 times, as we've said about a million times already. So, okay, there were quite a few people who had McCarthy or Kyle Walker-Peters, or maybe they had a Wolves defender that wasn't Vinagre, or early movers on Emi Martinez. But for the most part, they weren't necessarily the defences that we were really picking out as the ones to invest in. And some of those we would have been picking out are amongst the seven teams that have no clean sheets so far. Man United, I've suffered and lost money on Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Spurs, I've suffered and lost money on Matt Doherty. Sheffield United, I've suffered and will probably lose money on Aaron Ramsdale. And Burnley, who have of course played three times, but who haven't been all that good and I think have conceded 12 goals already this season. We weren't necessarily saying that this was the return of big at the back or anything like it. I don't think we saw this coming either, where defence has been pretty irrelevant.
No, I think that definitely my flop so far was expensive defenders, by which I mean defenders that were in the FPL template meta before Game Week 1 kicked off. I mean, apart from maybe an honorable exception, KWP or McCarthy at Southampton, apart from that, you know, people weren't really interested in the teams, as you mentioned, of Villa, West Ham, Saints and Wolves. Them being the only ones having two is a little bit, yeah, that's a surprise. You'd be expecting Liverpool's or, you know, the City's at least to be recording a little bit more. I did have a little look into this actually, in terms of the first four and how many clean sheets there have been in previous years. And so this year, 17 clean sheets is what we've got so far. Last year, 18 clean sheets at this point. So actually, it's not that far off the 18, 22, 31, 17, 26 as you go further back. For the first four, it's not wildly out. It's just it looks worse because the players that we were entrusting with these clean sheets didn't get them, and unlikely sources did.
On that point, defenders were actually my flop as well. So incidentally, I did some analysis in terms of where we were, what position we were in last year. And so far this season, five teams have conceded 10 plus goals. This time last year, it was just Norwich that had conceded 10. As you mentioned earlier in the pod, 144 goals have been shipped so far. In comparison to last year, it was 113. So there's 31 more goals have been conceded so far this season compared to last season. That's with two less games as well. And it's just been these ridiculous results, hasn't it? So we saw Wolves were shipped 4, then it was City shipped 5, United shipped 6, and Liverpool 7. And it's just like ridiculous that these teams are meant to be the defensively solid ones. And it's just like, with no idea what the hell is going on. And even like, as I said, the team of the year or team of the season so far, Everton have got problems in defence and goal as well. So, you know, just it doesn't look like any clean sheets are coming from anywhere. And, you know, whilst we're looking at our defenders for only attacking returns ultimately at the moment, trying to find out who's going to get those assists and goals for us. But I actually called out, because I thought I would have to pick a player. I decided actually to pick Trent as the flop so far, which might seem a bit harsh considering, you know, they did all right against Chelsea and Arsenal. But, you know, just in terms of what's happened with Liverpool, so they only had a couple of clean sheets, I think, because of, you know, they kept conceding one goal, didn't they? So they only had one clean sheet so far this time last year, but they'd only conceded 3 in total, while so far they've conceded 12. So it's a massive change in terms of their defensive performances. And Trent's been very unreliable defensively, and he's been caught out a number of times for a number of those goals, and he's just been looked really poor as well, hasn't he? So this time last season, he had 3 assists to his name, and had created 14 chances as well. He's got just the 1 assist and only created 8 chances. So he's even though that's quite high for a defender in terms of his attacking output, it's teams have dropped off a cliff a little bit as well, which is a little bit concerning for us owners, especially when we're considering spending 7.5 million on this guy, and he's not really bringing in the points or the returns. In fact, he's getting negative returns for us.
Yeah, Trent has undoubtedly been a disappointment. It's just, I guess there's just been so much defensive disappointment. Maybe looking further forward, one player who was being tipped in a lot of circles pre-season, but who could definitely be categorised as a flop, is Dele Alli, who has dropped 0.4 in value. Very few players have done that. He's barely played an hour in total, and he's got 0 returns in that time, which is obviously not good enough. And then Timo Werner, I'd have to speak about, because I think there were a few players I was more bullish about in pre-season than him. He's dropped 0.2 in value in seemingly good fixtures. He only got just an assist against Brighton, and that was it. Didn't actually have pens to bail him out either, like other strikers who weren't necessarily getting too many chances, like the likes of Vardy, for example. So just overall, the Timo Werner thing has not worked out so far. You could say just Chelsea hasn't worked out in general, really, for most people.
Those were my two as well, especially Werner. Dear me, I didn't go over game at one actually, but I mean, I was behind the sofa for that game week, and it's just incredible how perceptions again have shifted about him completely. I mean, all it would take is a bit of a turbo Timo to show up in the next game, and suddenly, oh, 9.3, oh, that's great value. And I think it's just one of those things that we'll see when as players do acclimatise to our league. So, what can we tell after four FPL game weeks? Had a lot of discussion there. I think the headline seemed to be that Everton looking good and set to continue looking good. Kane versus Son, Kane and Son, very exciting, those two players. The talisman theory is still relevant, likes of Wilson, likes of Grealish that have been mentioned here. And there's a few questions, aren't there? Will penalties continue? Will this rate of scoring continue? Can the defences turn it round? As a hot take, I'd say probably it's not sustainable, and I think that we will see some sort of reversion to the mean, to use that horrible phrase, soon. But it has been absolutely crazy, hasn't it? Any more?
Well, yeah, one thing I would say that we've kind of learned is to throw our biases out the window a little bit, because there's always seems to be a surprise in store for a new game. So new campaign. So last season, obviously, there were lots of biases around Danny Ings and his Garce ankle, and lots of people avoided those points for various parts of the season. Of course, we've seen similar biases around players and clubs like Jamie Vardy in the past as well. And this season, we've had these biases based on previous performances around the likes of Everton being unreliable, or Aston Villa and West Ham being just generally dreadful FPL picks, or even from last season starting to talk about Harry Kane and how he couldn't necessarily perform at the highest level anymore and was playing too deep and wasn't the same FPL asset that he'd been in previous years. And certainly I think what we've learned from the last four game weeks is that these biases can change very easily and don't stick to them too heavily.
It's a good example of being able to turn around your perception on a player, because we could be, you know, we've pilloried him a lot in the past, but and we could be still saying, oh, I don't believe it, he's a defensive midfielder, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, really, it's a good example of how you know, if evidence occurs on the pitch in front of you, you've got to be able to react to that and not have sort of inbuilt biases about players.
I even bought Richarlison.
Enjoy the ride, I suppose, is all we can say. As you said last week, it's just one of those times. Hopefully after the international break, it will start to stabilise a little bit. All right, let's take a break there and move on to mini-league correspondence, Q&A and all that sort of stuff after this.
Who got the assist?
So we're back, and it's time to catch up with the Who Got the Assist mini-league. As we said earlier, the league code CPSUOF. If you would like to join, so I'm going to do a quick rundown of the top five. So in fifth is Hersh Pandya. He's dropped a little bit this week with only a 61 pointer. He's down to fifth now with 309 points overall. Also dropping is Arvid Rushen with 57 points, winning the Kapoo. So both those guys have dropped slightly in terms of their overall rank, but we've got three people that have risen with some fantastic FPL scores. I'm just looking at these scores, I just can't believe it, to be honest. We've got 06 with 92 points this game week. Mohamed Mozin with Hunter, 88 points.
And oh my Lord.
Zaki Shane, the Zakaria team, got 101 points this game week.
And what?
No chips or anything like that. No chips for you, don't worry. But, you know, just a crazy return there with Kane and Watkins, Captain Salah, Rodriguez, Sice and McCarthy. Just unbelievable score there for Zakaria. Overall rank 424. So that's mad. So well done, all the guys to have had these brilliant scores this game week. I'm very, very jealous.
So stunning stuff there, and certainly outdoing us so far this season. I guess we'll move on to the next segment, which is, of course, correspondence. You've all been waiting for it, I know, guys. This is your chance to add your thoughts to topics raised on previous pods, to start a conversation with one of your in-depth opinions, or just to share whatever's been on your mind. This week, thank you very much, guys, because we've equaled our record, and we'll continue to do that if you guys get in touch to whogottheassist@gmail.com with your emails. Anyway, this week's correspondence, it comes from friend of the pod, Joe Bruin, and he's looking aptly, I guess, looking forward to the rest of the season and looking at what we should be doing with our chips. So his email is entitled, "For the Love of Correspondence." We love it too. Hi all, cracking pod, keep up the fine work. Basically, when do you guys look to play your chips? There have been a lot of early wildcards amid the madness, and while I'm lucky enough not to have needed mine yet, there's bound to be a game week where it's going to get more tempting than it probably should be. I'm aiming to save my triple captain for a double game week and free hit for a possible dearth of fixtures where only a handful are being played. But I don't think I've ever played a successful bench boost in my life. Me too. This may require consideration of when double game weeks are actually likely to be this year, of course, with a league schedule that looks busier than N'Golo Kante after a six-pack of Red Bull. Thoughts, please. Cheers, Joe.
Cool. Thanks, Joe. Very interesting question. I think that obviously using wild cards is very much in the spotlight right now. Loads of people in wild card, obviously Anthony is. And it's definitely something that's been talked about. When's the best time to use a wild card this year? Just we've got a funny little period coming up, don't we, after Christmas. So this year, for the first time, it's not quite half the season that you get to use wild card one. You have to use it before game week 16. Following game week 16, you get the wildcard back in game week 17. Game week 18, there's a blank. Game week 19, there's a double. So that means that there is a possibility that using a wildcard in game week 16 is a good idea because it sets you up for game week 19, that double. And you can use your free hit in game week 18. You still with me? So game week 16 wildcard, game week 18 free hit, game week 19 bench boost / triple captain is something that I'm really looking at doing. I mean, I've used a lot of reactive wildcards in the past. So by that, I mean wildcards to ask cover or just react to a very short-term set of data. And that's always ended badly for me. I've seen it happen to lots of people in the past, e.g. people getting Triple United last year. And apart from making money, I just don't quite see at the moment with confidence what I'd be moving to if I made my wild card. I want my wild card to be proactive and I want it to serve a function. Maybe like the second one is obviously really planned and the first one is more often used just to kind of steal a march on your rivals and trying to make your rank better. So I really like the idea of using the wild card in game week 16, the first one that is. Free hit 18, bench boost 19, and triple captain and the second wild card to be used later on in the season. You know, if there's another array of blanks and doubles in the wild card, be great then. Triple captain can be used whenever there's like a nice kind of random double or something like that. But I mean, I'm not dogmatic about it. That's what's important too. So game week 16, that's when I ideally want to use my wild card. I have no interest in using it right now. But if I do get to the point where my team is really, you know, in the dumps and I've got to just do it, I'm not going to care. I'm just going to pull it, you know, because I prefer, as I said last time on the pod, to be at game week 16, 100K, having used my wild card, having to use a few hits rather than getting to game week 16 with my wild card, but 1 million ranked, because like there may be that there's a short-term value which exceeds the long-term value. At the moment, I'm not quite seeing it, but there may come at a point where I do see it. Nick, I mean, Anthony's on his wild card, but when are you planning to pull it? I don't think you're holding it, are you? You're kind of planning to use it fairly soon, right?
Yeah, I'm almost tempted to use it this game week, to be honest. The more I kind of look at my team and the fact that I'm wanting Son, I'm wanting potentially Kane as well in there, it's calling me and I'm quite close to actually even pulling the trigger. And I think that's my concern in regards to your strategy, Tom. I just don't think I can wait that long sitting on the wild card. And you mentioned sort of 1 million rank. I mean, we'll see even if I can get that high without using it, to be honest, at this rate. So it is something that I think generally when I come to planning the wild card, I always use the first one relatively soon, but not like straight away. I always like to leave it to about game week 6 to game week 8, because I feel like at that stage of the season, you have that information based on the first 6 or so games, because you know the first few games is a bit random, but by then you have the information, you kind of know who the form players are, what's going to potentially be the trend of the season, and we talked about a few of them earlier. So that's kind of my general plan for the first wild card. In terms of some of the other chips, I kind of just, you know, go to the main man himself, Ben Crellin, and see what the hell is going on for the season, because as you know, it's probably going to be, you know, crazy again this season. We've already got various blanks and doubles that have been discussed, and as you mentioned earlier, Tom, but there's going to be more later on in the season as well, I'm sure. You know, there could be fixture cancellations, could be completely random. So that's how I kind of use my bench boost and triple captain. I always target those double game weeks, and that tends to be I tend to find that to be the best strategy. For me in the past, didn't work necessarily last year with a triple captain, but previous years, you know, it has worked wonders, you know, using that wild card to try and get as many double game week players as possible, even, you know, up to sort of ending up with almost like 28 games or something like that, if you can. And then, you know, bench boosting. And that's kind of just generally how I plan my trips. And you can use a free hit and a blank as well, you know, combine it all with kind of works out just about okay, but yeah, it can be quite challenging to navigate and get very complicated spreadsheets sometimes. trying to fix it, figure it all out.
I guess the most interesting thing I can add to everything you said is maybe just why I've wildcarded now. And it effectively just boils down to, I guess you could say I'm being reactive to a poor start. I would say I'm being proactive and trying to get the right players to continue on from here.
Yeah,
you know, so depending on how you want to view what I'm at, you could say either of those. But I think what it boils down to is there is definitely a fixture shift happening in the next, you know, game week or two for quite a lot of teams, and so it gives me quite a decent opportunity to get set up for that. We've mentioned Brighton before being one of those, for example. I've got Lamptey into my side, for example, and then there is, I didn't have any of the Spurs guys. I'm going to at least have one of them. I feel I can't go on without one of them. It'll probably be Kane within my side. I was a bit short on Everton players. I picked up the wrong one in Richarlison over Calvert-Lewin. I'm happy to accept that Calvert-Lewin is the one to have. So rather than getting too ingrained in what I'm doing, he's someone that I would need to get in as well.
Oh, thank God. I'm so glad you're getting rid of Richarlison. Now he's actually going to fucking do something.
Yeah. It was all going to be perfect, Tom, until I brought him into my team. For example, Chelsea as well, their fixtures are okay, kind of, you know, going along from here. I feel that they'll be able to pull more clean sheets with Kepa out and Mendy in, and Chilwell had a pretty decent start. So I've him there right now just to accumulate some value, and I wouldn't be surprised if he even stays in my side. So it's just overall, I feel that this is a pretty decent time to wildcard, build up some value and get going. With regards to the other chips, I've had an incredibly checkered history when it comes to the bench boost and triple captain. I think neither of them have worked out for me ever since they were introduced into the game. So hopefully I can change that this year. And I wouldn't be averse to using the triple captain in a single game week. I think I did that last season with Aguero and it didn't work. And a lot of other people had an awful lot of success on their triple captain at other times. The free hit is definitely useful, and I think it has to be used to navigate a blank game week. Just it's such an easy way of getting through a blank game week. I think it would be silly to ignore that. If we do have some sort of lockdown and games are suspended for a while and we get a free set of transfers like last year, I think it worked so well for people to use the bench boost after that I would keep that in mind if we do have another lockdown and there is that situation arising again, that the bench boost was just perfect for that returning game week.
Yeah, absolutely was. It was definitely an interesting period, wasn't it? The whole lockdown period. But yeah, hopefully that's given you a nice overview, Joe, of the different ways in which you can use your chips, I suppose. It sounds like that kind of game week 18 blank may be a prime candidate for the free hit, basically. And that double in game week 19, that's a TC and a BB. And then just use the other one as the calendar develops. As Nick said, keep an eye on what the Don, Ben Quellen, has to say.
So thanks very much, Joe, for getting that in. And thanks so much to everyone else who emailed in to whogottheassist@gmail.com with their correspondence. Do get them in. Let's break the record. You've got 2 weeks to break the massive record that we've set, folks. So get emailing. We need to create a headache for everybody with so much correspondence.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Well,
you sound so delighted, Tom.
after that fantastic section, which is no doubt going to remain past game week 8, let's move on to the Q&A, the quick fire Q&A, as we put it. And we start off with bad bandwagons. So this is an interesting one that I indexed after the Ross Barkley signing, because John FPL2 asked us, with Ross Barkley signing for Villa, are there any players we've owned frequently in FPL for at least, you know, a week, say, in recent times that we've instantly regretted, but we keep going back to? So, you know, Walcott has just gone to Southampton, I see. You know, likes of Troy Deeney, likes of Lucas Moura. Any of these players that we just, like a bad ex, for some reason we just can't get rid of them even though we kind of want to? What do you guys reckon?
I think there were three names that definitely came to mind for me, and I think you could kind of see a similarity between all of them, really, and the type of position they play and the sort of points that you would hope for them to score. And those three are Callum Hudson-Odoi, Trossard and Pulisic. All of them last season I bought and sold multiple times. I think I've done that with Hudson-Odoi two seasons in a row, that I've bought him, sold him, bought him, sold him. I'm definitely somebody who has serious issues with like low but like mid-priced midfielders that I take punts on. It's continually a problem for me, and I've already seen it with those, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see that people that I've sold already this season eventually find their way back into my side when I believe in them again. It's a tough price point for me. Foden probably would be the one. I brought him in, didn't work out. I'll probably bring him in later in the season. It probably won't work out again. It's just how it is.
Yeah, I think with me, obviously, there's just a few characters like that. So Callum Wilson's one that sort of drifts in and out of my team, gets a 2-pointer, leaves, maybe comes in and later for a game against Norwich and gets a 2-pointer and leaves again. He's definitely one of those players that sort of does my head in. I'm also quite guilty of it with Luca Dean as well, to kind of, you know, go. I always have a little pun on that premium defender, and he always seems to let me down of recent weeks. And he's probably going to be out my team this game week, maybe, and then he'll probably be back again in a few game weeks. Come game week 8, I'll probably be lured back into him, or game 9, even when they've got Fulham. So he's definitely one as well. Of course, Eden Hazard's the classic case for me as well, the classic troll, the premium asset.
Yeah. Seems
to perform at the ball for other people, but never for me. So he's been in and out of my team hundreds of times, and I always miss out on those points, unfortunately.
I mean, the ones that I think of, and maybe it's just a symbol of how bad I am these days at FPL to some extent, are the ones where I've jumped on the wagon, but it's way too late. The wagon is careering off the road, and that's when I jump on. You know, the likes of Danny Ings last year, I think I got one goal from him, and everyone else got like, you know, 12. I was just, oh, for God's sake. And sort of in the past, you know, the man, when Ollie came in, like, I had Martial,
who got
injured. Rather than getting Pogba or Rashford, that was really annoying.
Yeah.
This season, Martial again, I've gone back to him. He's got me a princely 5 points in 4 games after I specifically left a spot for him. Like, he's the epitome of that Hazard syndrome where he's absolutely incredible for other people. I'm thinking about that kind of the strong dog meme. He's just incredible for other people in their teams. But then when he's in my team, he's absolute shambles. And the other one that came to mind was Mahrez. Not because I've particularly owned him very much, but he'd always been one that on wild cards, free hits, etc., etc., I've had him in my team until probably the 11th hour and removed him. I've chickened out and gone, oh, I'm not sure he can do anything. I think I had it in Project Restart where he was in my free hit team until the 11th hour. He went on to be the highest point scorer in that game week. Absolutely smashed it. And I removed him because I was worried about rotation. Like, he just annoys me so much. And watching him play as well just doubles that down. I'm not going to go into that. But yeah, like, ugh. There are all these players who we do have personal fingers against, but as Nick sagely put it earlier on, we need to overcome our biases, as we saw with Stag buying Richarlison, or with me buying the defensive midfielder Harry Kane. I use that term lovingly.
Just a quick mention as well of our favourite son of Granada now, Kennedy, bro POTUS. What a man. The finest of bandwagons, a player who scored 4-5 goals in the Premier League ever, somehow managed to become a bandwagon amongst us.
I know. He got an assist, didn't he? And he was actually on my bench that week because I played him 3 weeks and I did nothing. Benched him and he got an assist. Unbelievable.
Right, what a guy. We look forward to his arrival back from loan. He's still
again
on the books of Chelsea.
who isn't on the books of Chelsea at this point? I wouldn't be surprised if one of us wasn't on the books of Chelsea. Right, okay. Next question, Stag. I think it was one of your correspondents.
It's a correspondence, and there was just so much correspondence that we had to put it into the Q&A, guys. It's just amazing how this slot has really taken off. We really do appreciate all your emails to whogottheassist@gmail.com. But anyway, Ronan Gallagher emailed and he was asking about, with regards to our teams, what constitutes a good season? Do we go for overall rank in the top 10k or top 100k and classify a good season through that? Or is it all about winning our mini leagues? Ronan him saying that for himself, his objective is the top 10k overall. Good luck to that. He managed it 2 seasons ago, hashtag humble brag, as he says himself. But as a minimum, he seeks to be in the top 100k. So in doing that, he ignores for the most part his mini leagues. So he thinks that having that longer term strategy allows him to ignore the bad game weeks. Game week 3 was poor for him. And it enables him then to focus on that long term picture, which he feels just helps him avoid or helps him negotiate dips or when he's struggling. Lads, thoughts on that?
My target has always been overall rank, actually, as opposed to the mini leagues. But in terms of our cash league that we're all in, I've actually managed to win it 2 of the last 4 years. So that seems to have worked out pretty well for me, even though I'm always targeting overall rank. And unfortunately, I haven't actually ever managed to finish in the top 10k in my FPL career. My highest overall rank is 17k. And so I do kind of want to get that 10k finish. I would really love to do that this year. I don't know, it's not started off brilliantly, has it? So I'm not sure if it's going to be achieved, but certainly, you know, that would be like a great goal to hit, or a great target to hit this season. The sort of 4-figure overall rank would certainly go down well with me.
I mean, I do have a top 10k, I think, somewhere in the repertoire. But over the last 3 years, I've been absolutely terrible. So, do I go for OR? Do I go for anything else? Do I go for Humble Brag? No, I go for respectability. That's where I've been cowed into over 3 years.
Wait, are you talking about FPL or what here, Tom?
I think in life, I'm fairly respectable, but in FPL, it's been embarrassing. But it's just one of those things that seems to have happened to me since being content creator. I don't know what happened.
It's the same thing happened to me. My best rank ever was a 12k finish, and that was the 2 years before I made this godforsaken Twitter account, which has just seen me just become poor at FPL, it seems, over time. Yeah,
I mean, at the end of the day, as we said on the kind of how to have a bad game week last week pod, I think it's just a case of, you know, trust the decision process. If you can improve it, always look to improve it, and always look to learn from managers who are better than you, or at least you respect. Right, next question then. Liverpool defensive double ups. So Sam Phillips asks if we should continue to consider the Liverpool double up for Alisson. And Praz United asks if we should even consider their defenders at all in a Brazilian keeper's absence. So things haven't been very good there, have they? What do you guys reckon to this? Is it time to look at Liverpool defence again and think, time to get rid of?
So the thing is that this is the second year in a row that we've had Liverpool's defence starting poorly, where we all believed in them, and then Alisson goes out. And when Alisson was out for quite a period of time at the start of last season, and Adrian was in there, it just didn't work. Like, yeah, sure, the defenders still picked up their attacking returns, but they were nowhere near what we would have considered value for money. That totally changed as the season went on. Alisson returned, they picked up their clean sheets, and whilst he wasn't in the running for the Golden Glove, they had a pretty decent defensive record. What is different now, in at least the first 4 weeks versus maybe that period at the start of last season, is that Liverpool's underlying stats, of course, caveat, completely skewed by conceding 7 goals in one game, they're not particularly promising. And so with that in mind, I'm thinking that on a wild card, I might go forward with one Liverpool defender, but the double up seems a little bit too much. Now, if you've already got the double up in place, like, it's kind of hard to move money out of defence to get it forward without 2 free transfers, unless you're, you know, you can, let's say you're bringing in someone that you're going to captain, and maybe it's more justifiable to take a hit to transfer out a defender then.
Yeah, no, okay. Let me be honest with you, like, I've got TAA, and I'm actively in my plan to sell him this week. I think it's within what Nick was saying earlier about him being one of the flops of the season. I don't think Liverpool are looking like the sort of team who are going to keep clean sheets at the moment. And I don't really see the upside at the moment from him, which justifies him being a 7.5 million asset in my team. I also think that you're not really going to see the rush on a player like that, because it's very tough for people to get to a 7.5 million defender, especially as the trend continues that we're going to be putting money further forward. So I can be fairly sure that his value will stay around 7.5-ish. Just one stat. I know that there's obviously a bit of a vex. It's an interesting conversation about whether it is Adrian that makes things really bad. But one stat I do want to draw people's attention to is that Adrian has played for Liverpool 21 times. In that time, he's conceded 33 goals. He's only kept 4 clean sheets. And the goal that we saw him concede against Villa, the first one after 4 minutes, that was the same goal that he gave away last year against Southampton when Ings scored. And I think that, as Stag said, without Alisson, without that sort of safety net of a person to pass back to, who's good on the ball, able to then recycle it over, it really, their defensive strategy, I think, isn't as coherent, isn't as fluid. And I'm just really worried about them. And I think I'm going to jump off Liverpool for the time being, reassess, maybe get back on Trent. I know what he can do. I'm sure he can get me 24 points at some point in the season. But as it stands, I'm just not trusting them, basically. So I think I may be milking that cash cow, as it were, for the time being. Nick, what do you reckon here? You're always a stalwart lover of Trent. Are you going to follow through and drop him? I think you were planning to drop him at one point, weren't you?
Yeah, I nearly sold him after game week one, actually. But I ended up selling Van Dijk instead, which kind of worked out fine.
In fairness, I should probably apologise, Nick. I kind of browbeat you by reminding you of the Leicester game on that one.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, ultimately, I think with Trent, I still probably back him to be the top scoring defender at the end of the season. You know, I would say if you had to ask me who's going to end up being the top scoring defender, it would be Trent. He's probably going to get those assists. He's probably going to bang in a couple of free kicks, and I'm sure those clean sheets will eventually come for Liverpool. I think in the short term, though, looking at a double Liverpool defence, you're looking at the next five. They've got Everton, Sheffield United, West Ham, Manchester City and Leicester. So there's only really two probably viable clean sheets there out of five. And if you've got a double defence, you don't want to be looking at that team and think, actually, I can only see two clean sheets in the next five. You know, why would you want to be doubled up on a defence where you can't see any, you know, clean sheets coming? So I certainly think if you are doubled up, you know, you could be looking to transfer one of them out. And potentially looking to sell Lickadine, as I mentioned, to Ben Chilwell, maybe. So Chilwell might be a decent character perhaps to bring in if you are looking for a defensive transfer there. He's appearing heavily on the market forces, but you know, Chelsea have Southampton, United, Burnley, Sheffield United, Newcastle next five by comparison. So potential four clean sheets there if they can actually get their act together, and they do now have a competent goalkeeper as well. So you know, I'd probably keep Trent for now. I'm not just gonna sell him, but you know, I'd be very reticent to kind of keep a double up if I had a double up.
Yeah, no, I think I'll be doing that Trent to Chilwell move. So there you go.
It's already been done on my wildcard.
Oh, whoops. Yeah, no, I haven't done my moves yet, but yeah, no, we'll come on to that in a minute. Right, okay, so next question. Double ups, which ones are the best? Friend of the pod, James Carroll, J.Carroll, asked if Everton and or Spurs double ups necessary for wildcarders. Oh, might have spoken about that already. Linked to this, Spurs revelations, FPL Dave asks, if we trust Mourinho to maintain this attacking fervour, what do you reckon, guys?
Well, like, I guess I was already undermining trusting that attack too much. Like, geez, you'd be a fool not to have at least one Spurs attacker in your side, even as just an insurance policy, if nothing else. But they have got particularly decent fixtures coming up. You know, West Ham, okay, they've been good defensively so far, but you'd think that Spurs should be able to find a way through them. Burnley haven't been particularly good. Brighton, jury's still out really on how they're going to be, and Spurs have been quite good against pressing teams so far. And then it's West Brom, who in game week 8, who you would say have been whipping boys so far. So we shall see how they do, and I think the double up it's viable. It's worked extremely well for anyone who's done it so far, but at the same time I think I'm going to probably do something else when the time comes to it. As for the Everton double ups, to be honest, I think even the Everton triple up is actually viable. I do think I'm a little bit more content with their defence than you guys are. Just their underlying statistics defensively are quite good. In terms of, for example, big chances conceded, they've only conceded four big chances. That's the best alongside West Ham, for example. Their XGC from open play, it's the third best. Only Spurs and Villa have conceded less XGC from open play. So, okay, Pickford problems aside, that's a pretty decent defence that we're looking at there. And so the likes of Michael Keane or Yerry Mina, who are very strong in the air going forward as well, definitely be considered, along with obviously your James Rodriguez, your DCL, your Richarlison, etc.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think if I was on the wild card now, I would be doubled up on Everton. I think, yeah, I'd probably have DCL and probably have James. And then Spurs-wise, I can see where you're coming from, Anthony. I wouldn't really be too down on doubling up, at least for the short term with Kane and Son. It's because the next four are pretty damn good, aren't they? West Ham, Burnley, Brighton, West Brom. That is four potential captains, right?
The problem is that we just don't know. Well, what we've seen so far hasn't been too promising when they face teams that are completely parked and that are, you know, I guess you could say United were parked but with less players and just incompetent. So it's hard to know what's going to happen. they were well beaten by they were beaten well by Everton in that first game, and the Newcastle game was just a frustration for everyone involved, especially anyone who watched the game.
And maybe you can see that happening with Burnley.
Yeah, I think my concerns here in terms of a double up on Spurs is financial. So you're basically talking about Kane and Son, because there's no one else that you're going to pick from Spurs. There's no other assets that would be attractive. You've got rotation from the fullbacks. So it looks like, you know, this week it was Aurier who had a good game, and Reguilon that started. But next week it could easily be Davies and Doherty again. So there's a rotation risk there. You're not going to pick any of the centre-backs, really, in all honesty, because you'd just be hunting a clean sheet, which probably won't come. And then, you know, Moura's kind of in and out of the team a little bit as well, as is in Ndombele, who's had a decent start this campaign. So it's Kane and Son, but that is too much money, 19.6 million, because you basically have to sacrifice either Salah or De Bruyne to fit them in, especially if you want to have a a bit of Everton in your team as well. So I think Everton double up, certainly. Spain, with Spurs double up, fixtures look great, but you're going to have to make some tough decisions elsewhere, such as probably selling De Bruyne.
Yeah, no, it's definitely one of those that you'd be definitely taking a risk of. It would probably be temporary, but I mean, who knows? If you'd have gone for double ups and start the season, you'd be absolutely flying, wouldn't you? So always swings and roundabouts, eh? Right, moving on to the next question. Chilwell, we've already answered that, I think. That's Ben Pelling's question. Let's move on to cheap strikers. So Vardy Boys asked us to have a look at strikers below 6.5 million. FPR Richard said there's so many options. You know, he suggests it may boil down to whether you get Brewster, 4.5 million, versus paying a little bit more for the likes, you know, Watkins, Antonio, Wilson, Bamford, etc., etc. You guys have already heard my love of Callum Wilson. I think he'll probably be the one that I'd nominate here at 6.4, but do you guys think that Brewster 4.5 record signing, so let's not do that, will he be rotated or not stuff, because that's of no value? Do we think that he at 4.5 is just a no-brainer, really, because you're not paying anything effectively and you've got a player who's going to be playing most games?
Actually, just having answered that last question, I've just been fooling around with a potential wildcard team where I can get Son and Salah and De Bruyne and Kane into it, but it also has Brewster in that lineup. And at 4.5 million, if you've got a starting guy there, you know, that's going to be excellent, isn't it, for FPL? Of course, he hasn't got too much Premier League experience. He's a very young player, but he has had he's had one decent season in the Championship last season. So he's a little bit untested, and Sheffield United just haven't had any attacking impetus at all so far, have they, this campaign? But if he plays next game week, home match against Fulham, could be a really, really good FPL pick. Could be off to a stormer, and you know, everyone would be bringing him in rapidly, wouldn't they? Only 4.5 million in that starters is excellent. So by all means, he's a great pick. I think obviously we mentioned some other ones, just getting Antonio and Wilson, and I also sung the praises of Mopay earlier, so I'm not going to repeat myself there, but I think there are certainly plenty of decent value, cheaper forwards this campaign, especially the ones who we talked about are on penalties as well, thanks to the porous defences. It's not about big at the back, certainly, but these sort of 6 million, 6.5 million forwards are getting lots of returns.
Yeah, it's only Manchester United and West Brom have had less shots in the box than Sheffield United so far this season. So it wouldn't be, that doesn't necessarily speak much for the chances that Brewster will be served up. But of course, at 4.5, it's hard to argue. And you would think that he will start soon. Like, we could point to Fabio Silva, Tom, and be like, record signing does not necessarily mean that they're going to start straight away. But I knew there'd be somebody screaming it, so we might as well deal with the Twitter mention before it comes. But at the same time, you would think that he would be able to take that spot pretty soon. And for example, for someone like myself on a wild card, fairly handy player to just stick in there to be able to afford that sort of team that Nick was talking about there a second ago, that you could have your Kane, Son, De Bruyne and Salah, for example, or, you know, similar types of expensive players if you can save that sort of cash there. But the best of those strikers for me is Mr. Talisman himself that we've spoken about earlier, Callum Wilson, who has been in my side since game week one.
Certainly. I think the other one I just want to pick out is Ollie Watkins. I know he's just scored a hat trick against Liverpool, so maybe you're thinking, oh yeah, recency. But the reality is, these strikers in this price point are very, very fixture related, I think. They're very, very fixture dependent, I think. And Aston Villa have an absolutely fantastic run all the way up to game week 15. Of traditional top six teams, they only play Arsenal in game week 8, they play Leicester in game week 5. That's about it. Wolves are game week 12, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of those fixtures look completely winnable. We've been lauding them a lot. He at 5.9 million and developing that relationship, as Nick had documented earlier with Grealish, that could be a fantastic value for money, especially if you're on a wild card now. 5.9, him and Wilson, you could, you know, have a strike force which could do bits for you effectively after not paying very much. Oh, imagine Watkins, Wilson, Brewster as a front three. I'm sure someone will have it and have great weeks, but I can't imagine it's going to stay just with the cheapies for the whole season. I'm sure like the likes of Jimenez will be back, or et cetera, but it is definitely, definitely an interesting sort of area, isn't it? But it's good that we have these sorts of options. We haven't even mentioned Antonio, but it's nice to be able to have these places to go to, I suppose. final question. FPL Porto, no doubt, upset that Alex Telles has tonight left for Manchester United, asks, are we even having fun in the FPL madness? Well, I mean, I certainly am, just because as I said last week, I just sit back and just watch it happen, you know? As soon as my decision's been made, as soon as the deadline is gone, I materially cannot affect anything. So why worry about it? Yeah, it's annoying, but why worry about it? And being able to adapt your yoga stance about it, as Dax, no doubt about Jake, it's just so handy. It really is. Just, I've seen so many bad game weeks. We all have. Everybody who's an experienced FPL manager has seen so many bad weeks that after a while, you hit a breaking point where you're like, well, I've seen so many times. Why do I get upset about this one? Oh, yeah. So I'm having fun. I think it's just hilarious to watch, basically.
I'm in agreement, actually. I'm actually having quite a lot of fun, even though I'm not necessarily at a great start. I'm enjoying the football. It's fast-paced, it's frantic, it's completely insane. Plenty of pleasure there. It's quite funny, just like on Twitter, you just see so many meltdowns, don't you? People, you know, bemoaning horrendous game weeks, and then they've got James Rodriguez in their team, and you're like, what is going on with Twitter? So many people having these sort of meltdowns. I just think everyone should relax. It's just a bit of fun, really, isn't it? And as you said, I've seen so many bad game weeks in the past. It doesn't really bother me too much to try not to have a full down breakdown every time I have a bad game week and just enjoy yourselves.
I hate it. I really do. It's like football being played in this like vacuous fakeness that is just completely out of touch with like the world that it exists in, with this fake fan noise trying to fool us that like there's something, you know, else before our eyes. The performances are borderline disgraceful across the board. Players clearly aren't fit. There are penalties being given away. Of course, everyone's screaming about the handballs penalties, but that's not the issue here, really. There's so many penalties being given away because defenders are just slow and accelerating and making silly mistakes because they're absent-minded, because they're just not match fit or whatever. And so there's so much trip-ups and jersey pulls and stupidity going on that it's just, I don't know. I don't necessarily think that there's any kind of like enjoyment in seeing bad football being played. If I wanted to do that, I could walk down to the park and watch some under nines playing. Do you know, like it's just silly. Like the Villa game and the United game, like they're both proper examples of just the silliness of this season. As far as I'm concerned, it's just too much randomness, and it's not like good football. There have been some good finishes in there, and there have been some good moments in there. Please don't take me wrong. But like, if it wasn't for the, you know, acted up punditry of the likes of Roy Keane and Patrice Evra just to make it somewhat enjoyable and the usual fanfare that goes on, I'm not sure if I'd enjoy this season at all, to be honest. That's only coupled with the terrible discourse online to do with the penalties. You've already had my rant about that in previous weeks. And just in general, the caustic nature of humanity means that, I don't know, to be honest. Like, I've taken a very non-FPL approach to this. Like my FPL team is bad, but it was bad last season too. I'm used to that. But just the football itself, I'll just trail off there on that one.
I think we've seen in past seasons, I think we've looked at the pod titles from around this time last year, that every season at the start of the season, anybody who kind of says they've grasped the thread has done very well, but I suggest that they're probably not being entirely truthful that they've got it all solved. It's always a bit bizarre as the season settles down. This year it's obviously amplified, but I'm able to see that it's just so bonkers that it's funny almost. Maybe it's apathy again. So maybe you're still in the age group stag where you're just like, oh, football should be this, football should be that. Whereas Nick and I have gone through the ringer so many times when I'm just like, yeah, you know what? We're at the grand old age of 31/32. We're just like, yeah, well, whatever happens, happens, isn't it, mate? Anyway, let's move on to transfers and captains. 2 weeks to go, obviously, so I'm not expecting very much to have been done. I know that Anthony's on his wild card. I know that Nick is hovering over the button. I think that he's been on mute for a while, looking at his other monitors.
I've basically been tinkering. For
have you just confirmed? I bet you just confirmed live, haven't you?
I haven't confirmed yet. I've just been thinking about the setups that I can achieve.
That's a wild card,
especially with Brewster. So
it sounds like both of you are going for it. So Nick, are you gonna? Do you think you're gonna wild card? Then you think you're gonna join Anthony?
I'm tempted. Yeah, I might do. I think if I can get Son and Kane in, I might as well just do it. To be honest, like I've got no way I can get Son and Kane. have to sacrifice my Vardy pick, sadly, which breaks my heart a little bit. But that Leicester and the Aston Villa home match doesn't look as appetising, especially considering how bad they were at home against West Ham and how good Aston Villa seem to be this season. So maybe I'll just go ahead and do it and see what happens. But yeah, it's looking likely at the moment, actually.
Just press confirm. Right, Anthony, I guess it's obviously difficult for you to give any assurances, and it is obviously in the COVID context, so anything you've got now may be out the window in 2 weeks. But to your best knowledge, how's it looking?
All right, I'll with all the caveats that you've kind of mentioned there, like, I'm currently have a team that was basically designed to build some value because I'd lost quite a bit of it. And I think we saw COVID have a pretty big impact on the league in terms of cases and disruption after the last international break, which obviously led into game week one. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens again. But with all that in mind, I have Martinez in goal. Villa's fixture is quite good. You'd think he'd pick up a few clean sheets in there. And I'm just going to operate with no second goalkeeper again, even though this was usually against my principles. It just works quite well. I think the defenders that are going to stay there in my defence right now are Tariq Lamptey, Ben Chilwell and Stuart Dallas. Really beyond that, I'm not quite sure which defenders I'll keep, but Leeds' fixtures are quite good. Chelsea's are and Brighton's are, as we said. Midfield, James Rodriguez has come in alongside Mo Salah, who stays. Son is there now. I don't know if he'll stay. I have brought in Harvey Barnes. He has only got one goal and one assist so far this season, but he has looked like a general threat. And with Villa next, what does that mean? I actually don't know anymore. Like, that could mean that he could do well. That might mean that Leicester are going to get absolutely hockeyed. So I don't know if he'll actually stay there by the time it comes to it. But right now, he's there. Jorginho's in, and I'm going to keep him there to try and just get the most of this fantasy penalty league thing. He's going to be the cheapest player on my side outside of the defenders by a distance. So we shall see with him. Callum Wilson, he will stay. Talisman himself, decent fixtures coming. Even the United game I wouldn't be too upset about, or the Wolves one, to be honest. Calvert-Lewin has to stay as a cover pick, if anything, and Harry Kane is in there right now. Certainly not a defensive midfielder anymore. I think if I was to say of Kane and Son which is likely to say, I would say it's Kane. And I think by the time that game week 5 comes, I wouldn't be surprised if Kane is the player that I captain as well.
I'm with you on that. I'm going to be bringing in Kane this week for the stricken Martial. Obviously, that requires some jiggery-pokery because of the price difference there. And the way I'm looking to do it is Trent out to Chilwell. I think that I'm going to be bailing Liverpool defence for the first time in probably about three seasons, something like that, just because I think at the moment it's not quite looking right. And Chelsea have got quite a few fixtures that look defensively solid. As Nick said, they've now got a competent keeper. The other one I might be getting rid of is Reece James. He was a very good start of season pump, but as Piquet has come in, they've kept a clean sheet. I think that the Rames reign, I guess, is over for the moment. So I've got 5.2 million for a defender. So it could be the likes of Sice, it could be someone even cheaper, you know, like a Ben White or a Adam Webster, maybe Concer, Mings. I don't know yet. But if I take the -4, I'm very reluctant to because of how weird the COVID context is. You might want to keep those points. But if I do buy a player, it's going to be for a perceived 90-minute man that I can just buy, leave, hopefully in my first team. So maybe someone like Sice would be that guy. Left wing back, of course, this game week. But yeah, that's how I'm looking. And Kane will be my captain, I think, against West Ham if I buy him. I can just imagine West Ham going for it after the last couple of game weeks. And Kane potentially running riot.
We were Who Got the Assist. Thanks very much for listening. If you're a new listener and enjoyed the pod this week, don't forget to hit that subscribe button. You can listen to us all season long.
Yes, indeed. Thanks very much for tuning in. Be sure to rate us as well. 5 stars, preferably on iTunes or wherever you're listening to us. If you want to join the podcast mini league, it is CPSULF. And if you have some correspondence to get in to break that record, it's whogottheassist@gmail.com. We'll be back next week, hopefully after Ireland have beaten Slovakia, for an international break friendly Introducing Anthony podcast, which I'm sure you will all be looking forward to.
Yep, I'm looking forward to that. It should be good fun. Just a bit about us, I suppose, in the international break. But in the meantime, I hope it's just you make sense of the madness for the second time. Enjoy the international break and speak to you next week, if not ahead of the new game week 5. Goodbye.
Sloan.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.